Welcome to the C-Word with Calista, where curiosity meets creativity, and we discuss the king of C's, content. Kicking off the season strong, you'll get that pun in a minute. Today's guest debuted in Watford as a goalkeeper, racked up a huge Malaysian fan base when he signed to Liverpool, and then played for my family's favourite team, Aston Villa, and he also played as a goalkeeper for England in the 2010 World Cup. I might be getting all of that wrong. David James, thank you so much for coming on the C-Word.
Calista, thanks very much for having me on. I think, yes, you're right.
Yeah, there was also like a bunch of other clubs, but the list was so long, I'm like... For someone who doesn't know football, it's fine.
Yeah, I think by prioritising Liverpool, you've pleased a few people, at least.
That's the only club, when I mention your name, that everyone keeps saying, oh, he played for Liverpool. So I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, I have to say, the Liverpool fan base in Malaysia, first of all, but in Pan-Asia is astounding.
Oh, yeah, they're really serious about the game as well.
Yeah, we've gone straight into a topic here. But having played so many years in England, and slightly, like I say, ironic, fortuitously, when I was 17 years old, mm-hmm. 16, 17 years old, I went to China with Watford. I didn't play, but I was like the standby goalkeeper. So I got to experience, I want to say, the old Asia, or at least the old China. And it obviously stuck with me for years and years and years and years. So having gone through my career, there was a couple of times, I think with England, we came back in early 2000s. But I didn't really spend any time in Asia. But towards the end of my career, and sort of up to now, I've spent so much time in Asia. And one of the things that I love, predominantly meeting Liverpool fans, and you talk about the sort of loyalty, dedication, commitment they have to the club. Most of these guys, in fact, have probably never been to Anfield, let alone seen Liverpool play.
Yeah.
They are as passionate as, and I say this to people regularly, they're as passionate as guys who go to every game.
I've asked this question to so many fans and nobody's actually been able to give me a proper answer, but I don't understand like the obsession with it, because they can get obsessed. I've got people on my Facebook who sign off every like status update with YNWA.
You'll never walk alone.
That's like their literal personality at this point.
Coming out to Malaysia, and we haven't done it post-COVID, but pre-COVID, coming out with Astro, we used to do the man on the street.
Yeah.
I think the first time I came out here with Astro, went into someone's house, and it's like, this is a shrine to Anfield.
Yes.
And at first you think, okay, but then you realise, hang on, though, these guys are 100% committed to the team, to supporting the team. And then you just, I embraced it in the point that I go around the world now, and I've done meet and greets with Liverpool fans in numerous different countries. And I always find the best ones are like the small, intimate ones where you end up sort of like Q&A, all right, thanks very much. And then we just sit there, have a coffee, and we're there for an hour talking about Liverpool. And you just get this feeling that this is part of their life, rather than it's like they're famous and I follow them. It's kind of like, no, I'm a Liverpool fan who lives here in Malaysia, in Taiwan, in Vietnam, whatever. It's just amazing.
The excitement that was going around the office the moment I said that you were coming in was insane. Like, I love the people I work with, but I had grown men going, oh my god, can I get a picture? I'm like, well, you can drop by the studio if we're done.
There's a big window there. Action shot.
But it's really cute. Like, I feel like football stars to a lot of men are pop stars to us, for instance. Okay. You know, it's how we react. Like, if you said Taylor Swift came into the room, like, I would also be losing my mind about it, you know? So I feel like you're on a similar level, just in a completely different industry.
I was just thinking that Taylor Swift could be sat next to us now and I wouldn't know who she is. And that's not because I'm kind of older than other people and don't listen to sort of... I've never... Slightly ironic this, because I'm on your show, but I've never been into pop when it's been pop. I've always caught up with it a bit later.
Well, I think this is a good part to like go back to like how we met. Because again, everyone's asking me, but why is he on your show? You don't know anything about football, which David actually found out.
Yes.
So we were at a Coca-Cola event watching the Morocco versus Portugal World Cup match in the cinema, and it was halftime. He was sitting there alone, so they were talking about it on the screen, and I kept hearing this I assume he's a pundit saying, yeah, I hate VAR, you know, VAR shouldn't be allowed to play, or whatever it was he was saying. And I was just like, who is VAR? So I very confidently hesitantly approached David and said, "Can I ask you a question? Who is VAR?" You just gave me a look, immediately said, "You don't watch a lot of football, right?" And I knew immediately. Yeah. That's a dumb question.
Who is VAR? Yes. Yeah. I think it was where you put some reference on who.
Yeah. But, like, I really appreciated it. You didn't make me feel dumb. You were just like, "You don't watch football, right?" And then you explained it to me. So yeah. I was like, I do feel kind of stupid, but at least it was a nice interaction.
Yeah, it was a wonderful conversation. Slightly went off the football track at points, but it was, I mean, that was a great event.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was a great game to watch in the cinema because it was a great game, even though I didn't know much about it. I could tell that it was a great game. I feel like that silly question that I asked you turned into us like talking for like 45 minutes about things that were not even about football.
Yeah.
So that was what made me realize that, because the person who was sitting next to you initially was panicking a bit because he didn't really follow football. So he was like, I don't know what to say. But then I realized everyone wants to talk football with David James. What if David James wants to talk about something else for once?
I like talking about a lot of different things, yes. As well as football. I mean, I love talking about football. And I sort of go back to the meeting up with Liverpool fans. But yeah, you're into music. I love music. So I grew up around music. My grandmother was a pianist for the local church. He's passed away now, but he's from Jamaica. So my mum used to play a lot of reggae on the on the radio back home. Everyone around us had listened to pop music. So back in England on the radio station, you'd have Top of the Pops or the charts, followed by reggae. So I'd hear pop music, then reggae music. Got a group of friends. Hip hop was becoming, I say, mainstream. There was an underground side, and this is why I didn't like pop. I was this rebellious teenager who was like, "No, I'm listening to stuff that no one else listens to."
Yeah, I don't think many teenage boys listen to pop music.
Yeah, so that was kind of my upbringing. So I had all this very eclectic musical taste, and then I started getting into DJing, so which I still do now. So yeah, music for me, if I work out in the gym, I can say pop. I can have old school pop music on. I can have drum and bass. I can have house music. I will have classical music, and the playlist might have all of them. And for me, it's all the same. It's just beautiful music around me. So yeah. So the conversation we were having, it's a bit like life. There's not one thing that just, I suppose football has sort of been the thread through all of it. But my focus is never on just one thing.
Yeah, because we started talking about Asian history.
Yes.
Which was so random. Don't even know how we got on the topic.
I think it's something to do with your ancestry, wasn't it?
We were talking about my mum's from the UK.
Yes.
And then we were talking about how my dad's like Malaysian Chinese, and your granddad was over in Borneo during the war.
My stepdad.
Ah, your stepdad.
He was stationed in Borneo at some point in his... The funny thing is, I never actually spoke to him about this. He passed away a few years ago, and I was going through some photos, and there was pictures of him in his army uniform. He was like shorts, because obviously it's hot there. And I was speaking to my mum, it's like, yeah, he was stationed in Borneo. Da, da, da. So on one of my previous trips to Malaysia, I kind of jump on planes quite often and sort of end up in a place, then find out where I am. We were in Borneo, and I said, we'll go to KL. Went on a trip, sort of explored
to the memorial,
yeah, because as much as I love, and I've mentioned loving Asian, in particular Asian Liverpool fans, I love Asia. I was thinking about driving here to the studio today, and it was, I feel strangely at home in a place which I've got no sort of family connection to or ancestry connection to. But exploring Asia for me is magic.
When people talk about Asia, it's kind of like, oh, it's so different, right? But when you come here, everyone seems to like really enjoy it, and they really acclimatize really fast.
I'd say yes, because I have. But it is different. And I think I've been to Malaysia so many times.
I always think that Malaysia's kind of like underrated. I feel like we're in that unfortunate spot where it's underrated because there's so many things to do. Like, it's such a diverse place. Like, you're driving out and you're on a beach, and then you're at a mountain, and there's so many other things going on. But maybe it's because there's so many things to do that there's no one thing that people pinpoint to come for. You know, every country has like their main attraction. But ours is just all over the place.
Yeah, I'm not part of the Malaysia Tourist board here, so I'm not promoting it for any other reason than my enjoyment of being here. Last time I was here, I went up to Genting,
Genting.
I keep getting them wrong.
Singaporeans call it genting.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I think I might have asked a Singaporean friend. So Genting Highlands. So I think the having spent a year in India, and I was working there as a manager, and just travelling around India, the diversity of India was. I think I explained to this the other day. Yeah. It's kind of like, wow, this place just is beautiful and amazing. And every time you go somewhere, different city, different area, you get a different experience. I think Malaysia should be sold that way.
Yeah.
Rather than. Got a wonderful shopping centre.
Yeah, the thing is, Asians like shopping. That stereotype is true.
Which isn't a problem for local sort of regional people. That's fine. Not a criticism at all, but I having gone to Ho Chi Minh City a few years ago, there was this old traditional view. And again, I know if I go back to Ho Chi Minh City, I'll go somewhere else and it'll be completely different. Yeah. But it was kind of like, yeah, I kind of get this. But then all of a sudden there's a big construction going up in the middle, which was going to look a little bit like Shenzhen.
Okay.
And then you go to, for example, Taipei with a 101. And it's kind of like, oh, it's a little bit like Shenzhen. There's this kind of Asian, well, actually it's global now. So, you know, no one's immune to it. Where the traditional fabric was kind of being eroded in a way. So the shopping bit's fine, but that's when you do the 2 hour or the half an hour trip outside the city centre. Yeah. If I normally, I haven't done it on this on my last trip because of World Cup commitments. I've been on English time, but what I normally do is go and eat local food. Go and find one of the wherever it might be. You end up sitting down with a lot of local people rather than going to the top restaurants. And this podcast is sponsored by it's just one of those things. I think you have to do it.
Oh, well, that's what I was going to ask you. You've been here so many times. Have you found a favourite Malaysian food yet? Because I feel like everyone likes one thing.
Durian.
You like durian?
I love durian. Oh, I love it.
Yeah,
why? Funnily enough, I haven't had any this trip.
I don't like durian. Like, the texture's weird.
Yeah, well, I think because it's, you can get it in so many different forms. I mean, the fruit itself, I'm talking to an audience which is very familiar with love it or hate it, but what I find with the fruit, and you say the texture's different throughout and that bit kind of
that's the part that I don't like.
The taste is amazing. The ice cream is fantastic. I have durian coffee at home. Out of date as well, some of it, but I still drink it.
Oh, that's an English thing. My mom does that. We've had like outdated stuff all the time.
Yeah, but it's boiling water, so anything that's kills off all the germs. Tastes good. Maybe that's the thing about durian. It kind of tastes the same anyway. So.
I mean, I can't argue with that.
But that's my thing. I mean, I don't know the name of a lot of dishes, but sort of chicken and rice, whatever. I learned this experience in India. I love flavour. I love spice.
Yeah.
But I don't like fat.
Okay, same.
And there's a compromise there because the tastier the dish, usually the fattier it is. So if I come out to first few days, maybe I'll have some local food. If I'm out for any sort of length of time, that's it. I go for plain. Usually get noodles in the end because it's the healthiest thing.
Yeah, that's one thing I've definitely noticed. Asian food is definitely not the healthiest.
No.
Probably why we have a lot of the problems that we do, but
it tastes good.
It tastes so good. But like you were saying, you were doing a lot of other things, like you DJ, and then you said, like earlier when you came in, you said you were drawing last night.
Yes.
So how did you get into all these other things? Is it just like because you'd like to try different things?
Yeah, I suppose I've got a restless mind in so many different ways. The DJing was, I want to say, a natural progression. I mean, I sit on my laptop now. I'll go in the gym. When I was playing, going in the gym was something that had reason and purpose and an end result. It was kind of like, if I'm fit here and work hard here, then I will play better on a football pitch. It was kind of like a natural synergy, if you like. When I stopped playing, it was kind of like, why am I doing this? Why am I sitting on a gym bike for an hour? And I know there's all the health benefits, so it's not that I shouldn't have been doing it.
But talking to the wrong person, I don't go to the gym.
Well, you should try, it's good fun. But for me to sit on a bike for an hour, even though I knew that there was a lot of health benefit, my drivers weren't in sync. It wasn't like, I'm doing this, I'm going to feel much better for it. It was kind of like, I'm doing this and it's hard. But I know I need to do it. So I had to find a distraction. I played Candy Crush first. Literally sat on a bike for an hour playing Candy Crush. And it was like, do you know what? I've got to level 500. and I've done an hour on a bike. I've had a good day here. Mm-hmm. And then I started doing the DJing. And it's a long story, but so I sit on a bike with my laptop DJing. Mm-hmm. I'll do an hour long mix, get off the bike, and it's like, great, I've got an hour mix that I can listen to. Mm-hmm. I've done my exercise, everything.
It's kind of productive.
Yes. Whereas back in the day, going back to the 80s now, I was listening to hip hop on the radio. Mm. I had a turntable, literally a normal record player with a, had a pitch, I think was a pitch an up and down volume thing. Mm-hmm. And I was listening to guys talking about scratching.
Oh, okay.
So I was pretending to, or practicing scratching, and then I had a friend who had another turntable, and we started doing DJing. None of this was ever particularly good, but it was an interest that we had, and from then I started doing basically house DJing.
So you perform?
I play out, yeah.
Oh.
It's not anywhere near a primary focus in the sense of playing mm-hmm. out. I do, everything I do, I sort of selfishly do for my own pleasure mm-hmm. or control, whatever.
So you don't want to be the next David Guetta?
Well, my partner's a DJ. She was a top DJ in Asia.
Oh.
I mean, she moved over to the UK now, but she was top DJ. It's funny, when you mentioned David Guetta, not him in particular, but once you start mentioning DJs, because she knows the scene as an act in herself, you kind of go, oh, yeah. And we were watching video during lockdown. We were watching a lot of videos of events, festivals and stuff. And I was like, these guys are the best DJs in the world. They don't even mix. There's a lot of talk. Anyway, sorry, I'm going off on one of my tangents. It was kind of like, there's me on my bike making sure every mix is right for an hour. And these guys spent half an hour talking. So, yeah, would I be the next day? I can talk for half an hour, so maybe yes.
And the next podcaster. After this, I'll be on your show.
Yes, you can be. Yeah, but just play music.
Well, I want to go back to what you said about Candy Crush, because I was watching a video last night and you said you almost beat the world record for Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't say anything. It stays on the internet.
I know. So I have a slightly obsessive nature, mm-hmm. which I think ultimately helped my football career, because I could just go bang.
You need that kind of obsessive personality to do something well, I think.
Yeah, I was 26 years professional, so something was there that kept driving me. And I played video games. And one of these things that was against computers, strangely, mainly against the computer than it was against other people. There was a magazine, and one of the lads at Liverpool, we were talking about the games we've got. I've got Final Fantasy VII. And then one day he came in and he went, oh, in this magazine, it said someone completed it in 60 hours. Mm-hmm. So it's three discs, three mm-hmm. CDs. And I'd done two CDs in under 40 hours. And I was like, I'm going to break this record. There wasn't even a world record. It was just something that someone said. But in my head, it's like, I'm going to break this record. And I sat in my... maybe my kids will hear this. I sat in the room playing this game. And I got called up for the England team. So where my obsession had gone, 40, 45 hours, blah, blah, blah. I went off with England for a week and didn't play the game and never played it again.
Well, I think they did like a reboot recently, right?
I'm saying I never played it again. I never played that version. I think it was a PS2. It might have been a PlayStation. Mm-hmm. Going back to the gym bike, mm-hmm. I thought, I've got... put a TV up on the wall and I started playing games. So I had a PlayStation 4. Mm-hmm. Other games consoles are available. Pulled out, I basically opened a drawer and this PS4 is there. I'm like, I'll hook it up to TV and on the gym bike I can play the PlayStation. Uh-huh. So I bought Final Fantasy, I don't know if it was the reboot, whatever
it's a reboot or like the reimagining, or they made it, like they made the graphics a lot nicer, I know, because a lot of people were obsessing about that as well.
Yeah, whatever version was the sort of the up-to-date version for mm-hmm. the PS4, I bought that. I'm trying to play Final Fantasy, and it's a different controller because mm-hmm, mm-hmm. you've got all these extra buttons on it. And I was pressing every button, and every now and again I was doing a whirl, and someone was sort of someone was going up in the air somewhere, and then I would die, and it was kind of like, this is really bad. And then I put on Gran Turismo. I'm pedalling away, bang, 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 speeding, going around corners and then slowing down my pedalling and started leaning.
You're following the game?
Yeah. I'm thinking, and I hit a point, and I think maybe obviously age and experience. So I was getting angry. I don't know how many people play games and get angry. Not in
yeah,
I wasn't,
a lot.
I wasn't hot, and
very aggressive.
I think the remote control fell on the floor once.
Fell
on the floor. Yeah, I mean, I was going around a corner, whatever. And I thought, whoa. And then the second time the remote control fell on the floor, so I'm not playing anymore.
But I mean, you're doing so many things, though. Like, you're doing the gym, then you're doing the DJ thing, and then you're doing the video games, and then you're also drawing and doing art. You said you also garden. And
Painting. So painting, my dad was an artist in Jamaica. Not people often say, oh, that's where you get it from. But I'm the only one who's, I want to say this rightly, but I think I'm the only one who's artistic.
Well, not everyone inherits it. Like,
yeah,
you know, like my brother can sing. I can't sing for anyone. Nobody wants to hear that.
Oh, no.
So, like, you inherit.
If you go in the gym, you can sing on your own.
Yeah, they'll kick me out.
Okay.
They'll be like, everybody else needs to work out too.
True. Whether I inherited it or not, I loved art. Like from a kid, I would in school. I remember people saying, "Oh, did you trace that or did you do this?" It's like, no, I just did it. Got into football and started drawing teammates. Because my mind's like buzzing all over. So I'd go back to the place I was staying at and I'd start drawing people, drawing players. I never really was a painter. I think synergy with the World Cup here. I think England were in 2002, might have been the Euro 2004 even. And there was a documentary in England about, they called it Footballer's Diaries. And the guy said, look, you do a bit of art. Do you want to come and do this segment for the documentary? I said, yeah, fine. And at the end of it, they said, we want you to do a painting. I'm like, I don't paint. He said, yeah, but it'd be really nice if you could do a painting. And I'm like, yeah, but I don't paint. Okay. And I thought, what can I do? So I used to have a bit of hair sort of around my chin, not like a goatee, but like a line.
Okay.
It was almost like my comfort blanket. I'd twizzle it like this to, not when I was nervous, but just, it was there. Anyway. And I thought, oh, yeah, I always do that. So I sort of painted a profile with my fingers twizzling my hair. Anyway, I did it. And I love the experience. So I thought, do you know what, I'm going to buy more paint, buy more canvas. And then from there, so when was that, 2003? So I've sort of been painting ever since. And now if I get the thing with DJing is you kind of, as you know, there's a finite number of records, even though it seems infinite. You're never going to hear every record once or every song once in your life. But when you've got your list, it's kind of your list. With painting, you can do whatever you want. I'm not an abstract painter. I can't let my mind go that way. But if I've got something in my head, the best thing I can do is get a canvas and start painting.
I saw some photos or was it a video of your paintings? But then you also said you don't sell them, right?
No.
So what do you do with the paintings when they're done? When you first started doing football and you told me you were drawing players last night, that means you've been doing it for a lot of years.
Yeah, on and off. I mean, painting takes time. If I get something in my head, usually it doesn't last too long. Even though I'm obsessive, I get things in my head and I have to get them out. So I give myself 3 days to do a painting.
Okay.
And that can depend size-wise. I mean, it could be, you know, sort of 30 centimetres, it could be 3 foot. Whatever the thing in my head is, I have to get it out and do it. And after 3 days, I kind of lose interest. So I've got loads and loads. It's a bit like my mixes when I've been on the bike. I've got all the mixes and I do an hour on a bike pretty much every day. So I've got these hour mixes. I don't even name them. I don't know if anyone else does. Just go on the keypad. So you've got like X, Y, double W, blah, blah, blah. And with the paintings, I keep them and think to myself that one day I'm going to go back and maybe finish it off
as we do.
The ones that I really like, I hang them on a wall. Occasionally I'll give them away depending on who I do the painting for. And I have done, I say sell, I've sort of donated some to charity.
Oh, okay.
But my loft at home, my attic, has a lot of paintings in. Yeah, one of the reasons why I started doing painting, because I was questioning the relationship between sport, football in particular, and art. And why we don't see much artwork relating to sports figures. If you think about it, even musicians, you can have paintings of musicians. It's kind of like, yeah, that makes sense. But you don't see paintings of Lionel Messi or... Yeah. I'm saying that there are paintings, but they...
But usually it's like probably Lionel Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo, and then that's it.
Yeah.
Like the the most popular players of that moment.
But if you go to an art museum, you very rarely see any sports star, horse races, lots of horses. Yeah. But these football, I was thinking, these are iconic figures. Mm. Why aren't they painting on them? And I was trying to sort of work it out that maybe because of the way that sport is actually delivered to us, mm-hmm. I might draw footballers, but I won't paint footballers mm-hmm. in a sense, except I retract that statement, actually. There's a lot of stuff that particular times get in your head or in my head, and it's kind mm-hmm. of like, how do I define this? I collect toys. One of my favourite things is actually kind of positioning toys to illustrate mm-hmm. my thoughts and then paint this scene with my toys. I'm kind of the only one who understands it.
So you must have like paintings all over the house.
Yeah.
Interesting. If you take photos of them, I'm sure like people would be interested to see that.
Yeah. Yeah,
he's like, no, not going to do that.
Not with the, I'm not. Put it this way: some of the subject matter is not necessarily public's. Mm. It's in my head, and other stuff is. Some of it's just, you know, I've got paintings of my grandkids, mm-hmm. my daughters, and their two babies at the time. That's for me and them.
Yeah.
So I don't need to share that with anyone else. Yeah. So yeah, but there are other ones which I'm sure I could share at some point.
Well, if we go back to football,
Your favourite subject.
Well, it was funny to me because I was on TikTok yesterday and apparently you tried out a different position in the team once.
Oh, wow.
And I found a TikTok of it. So what did they make you do? You're a goalkeeper.
Hang on a minute.
So.
I'm trying to think. TikTok, that's about 30 seconds, isn't it?
They put funny music.
There is no way that in 30 seconds they could have made me look good.
They didn't make you look bad, but...
I take that as a euphemism coming from someone who doesn't watch much football.
Let me find it. What did you play? What?
Quick background to the story. It was last game of the season. I was at Manchester City mm-hmm. and we were playing Middlesbrough and we were on level points, but their goal difference was better than ours. Mm-hmm. Whoever finished higher out of the two of us got into European competition.
Oh, okay.
So it was basically a European qualifier. And we were drawing 1-1 with what seemed like 20 minutes, but it was only like 7 or 8 minutes. Might not have been that long, right at the end of the game. And the manager changed me for another goalkeeper and put me up front.
And you've never done that before?
I think the last time I played in a competitive, not professional game, I was 15.
Because I remember when we did the Coca-Cola event and the host, Hanif, he asked you to kick the ball into the giant can yeah. and your face was just like, no, actually, no. It was when he asked you to juggle the ball.
Juggle the ball, yes. Yeah. No, that wasn't because I can't juggle the ball. It's just I had a pair of shoes on.
I was just like, if you remember, he's a goalkeeper. It's not.
Yeah. I wasn't prepared for that. But I wasn't prepared to kick the ball up for Hanif, but I definitely wasn't prepared for playing up front for Man City in the Premier League.
But why did they make that decision, though? Like, why did they put you on the field?
The question has never been answered to me by the man who made the decision, Stuart Pearce, the manager. No, in all the years, I've seen him numerous occasions, we've never had the conversation.
So how did you feel when he told you were going out, though?
He didn't really tell me. He just... So the board goes up,
uh-huh.
and next to the fourth official was uh-huh. the other goalkeeper. So I'm looking over going, I'm getting substituted. What's going on? And when I went over, they handed out an outfield shirt and I changed shirts. And it was like, oh, I'm going outfield. There wasn't any instruction where it was like, David, can you do this? Can you do that? It was kind of like, right. And then I just kind of winged it and didn't wing it very well.
Did you feel like panic or... Because obviously it's just happening at the moment. You haven't got time to be nervous.
No, I felt... I didn't panic. I just felt completely inept because I wasn't prepared for it. Yeah. One of these situations in the training ground, if on the day before training session, mm-hmm. if I'd heard just down the corridor, I might think about putting Jamie up top, I'd have gone, whoa, hang on a minute. Go back out on the training field, spend an hour practicing. But to call me up in the 5 minutes to go, it's like, you know, here's a shirt, go and...
It's so random.
But you know, the mad thing is, we ended up drawing 1-1. And we had a penalty right at the end of the game, mm-hmm. which we missed. So drawing 1-1, Middlesbrough finished above us. Mm-hmm. Had we scored, I could have kicked every Middlesbrough player 10 times and we would have won 2-1. It would have gone down as one of the best moves a manager ever made.
True.
But we didn't.
but I feel like for entertainment value, it was one of the best decisions the manager made.
One of the funny things is I'm doing a World Cup with Astro. We're talking about referees and, you know, decisions they I think possibly should be booked, shouldn't be booked. I would have been sent off in any normal context, but I wasn't. I kicked pretty much, it must have been 10 players in that team.
I don't know why decisions are made in football. Like, I was asking you the other day when we were watching that match, why they didn't let Ronaldo play the first half.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you said it was just like a decision. And then he came out in the second half where you said he might become the hero and everything.
And he very nearly did. In a sense, it's like music, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
People like what they like, but not everyone likes what everyone else likes. And in football, we're put in a position as a pundit, an expert.
Mm-hmm.
We're expert in the game, of course. But one thing we don't know is Cristiano Ronaldo is thinking, what Santos or the whatever managers are thinking. And you end up looking at it and saying, well, why is that decision being made? Cristiano Ronaldo is greatest of all time, one of them. And a lot of people like to use the fact that he's done so much historically as a reason why he should be allowed to do what he does now.
Mm-hmm.
And we looked at that game and you knew from the beginning, I felt that he should have played, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Not because of he scored 150 goals, but just his style of play would have suited it. But the manager goes with another player. And in the end, they get knocked out. And then that's the bit in football, which is so intrinsic and so necessary that people are allowed to debate over stuff which will never change.
Yeah.
And how right they would have been had it changed. It's kind
My theory is he was trying to save his strength for the finals, if they had made it to the finals. But
and maybe that was true. I doubt it. I just think that the player, Ramos, who actually started the game, scored a hat-trick in the game before. Then all of a sudden the manager put himself in a compromised position because, like, this guy scores hat-tricks. If you don't start him, you don't go through, it's your problem. But whatever he did, it didn't work.
What was it like transitioning from player to pundit, though?
Yeah, so it's a really good question. I wouldn't say it was easy or difficult to the point that I'm not sure if I noticed. Being obsessive is really good. When it came to punditry, one of the most difficult things for me in my playing career was listening to people talking about me. That used to bother me, and I thought if I was ever going to do punditry, then I would never do it that way because it really, really irritated me. I like data. I'm a bit geeky about things. If someone says something, it's like, oh, you know, football's never happened. This never happened in football before. Then I'm like, I'll find out if that's true or not.
And then let me tell you the facts.
Yeah. And then while I'm doing it, I'll find something else out. And a lot of this stuff actually has no significance, but I does find it interesting. So I try to go towards my punditry that way. And I found difficulty. Why your question is really good. I found it difficult because if you're geeky, there's a side of geeky which a lot of people struggle with.
That ability
or that consistent value of having to dig deeper and deeper and deeper into something. So while I'm doing all this, thinking that I'm a great pundit, in the end, I'm not actually delivering what potentially the audience needs, which is, he must be thinking this. So I kind of struggled with it a little bit to the point that I had to sort of change things, and someone gave me some great advice. It's all good, all well and good coming out with data, but basically qualify it. Ronaldo, he scores this many goals. Well, actually, when you look at whatever. So it's a learning process. I kind of changed to a point that I like doing it now. I know that I don't know what the result's going to be. I tell you what, these are the factors that got them there. Like we're talking about the World Cup, Morocco. I tell you what, look at this.
I mean, at the end of the day, it's just a prediction, right?
I'd like to think that I just don't turn up in Malaysia, sit on an Astro panel and go, yeah, he's a good player. I think he'll win because he's won before. Anyone can do that.
Yeah.
I'd like to think that if I'm sat there, it's because I've looked at a load of stuff. I've seen games and I think, do you know what? There's a tendency, So the audience, and again, some part of the audience wants to know how many times he's kicked the ball in a game. Others want to know what his favourite food is and who did he listen to when he's on the bus.
Oh, that's me.
But this is the reality, isn't it?
Yeah.
And bring Asia back into this as well. Once I started travelling around outside, and once I finished playing my career, you actually appreciate that fans have so many different reasons for loving the game of football. Similar to music. You said Taylor Swift could be sat in the studio with me. I wouldn't know who she is, but if he played a song, I'd go, oh, yeah, I know that one.
Yeah.
That's the one I enjoy when I'm blah, blah, blah. They don't have to have any different...
Yeah, it's like with people who don't watch football, okay, me. Like, sometimes they'll say a player's name, I'm like, I don't know. And then they'll show a face, oh, okay, I've seen him before.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know anything about him.
And you don't have to.
Yeah, I've seen him on the screen, you know.
That kind of relationship with football, I can't, you know, as a pundit, I don't think it's my job to make sure everyone gets what everyone wants, because that's impossible.
It's impossible, even with like music and everything.
You play a song that loads of people like, that's fantastic, but not everyone's going to like it. You understand that.
We get the same thing all the time. It's like, why do you keep repeating this song? On the other hand, the studio phone is full of requests for that song. Who do you please, right?
Yeah, if you go on there with confidence, it hurts me if I get a prediction wrong. Score lines, I don't mind. If I say they're going to win 3-2 and they end up winning 10-0, it doesn't matter. I kind of, something in there was right. But if I've done a lot of work, and this World Cup's been, especially the semi-finals, it's one of those things I sort of go back after and I'm thinking, do you know what? How did I not see that? But then you've got reality is you've got, any given time, you've got 22 players and a group of officials who are orchestrating what goes on a football field. Why do I think that me spending 2 hours watching video is going to trump what happens live and in the game, having played the game as well? So, yeah.
But to be fair, I think a lot of people were very surprised by all the results of this cup. So
this cup?
This World Cup. This tournament. So I don't know what it's called.
You football fan, yeah. biggest tournament in football, then you've just called it the Cup. Okay, this is not the Cup. World Cup, the FIFA World Cup. Yeah. But this, do you know the funny thing is, we've met through an event hosting because of the World Cup. And it was an enjoyable event. So in the end, there was a positive interaction that you've had through football. Yeah. It doesn't mean that you now have to go out and buy every Premier League international shirt. It's your choice whether you do it. And that's what I love about football. You've got dedicated fans and you've got the casual, transient observer. Going back to the World Cup and the shocks, it's kind of always shocks. But this tournament has in some ways been very different. And I think a lot of it has to do with the whole setup with regards to middle of the season or middle of the European season, at least, being Qatar, blah, blah, blah. In the end, football, I think the game of football, the playing of the games of football, should I say, in the World Cup has been a success. The legacy of the World Cup, we won't know. The impact it has on the rest of football, we won't know until someday someone turns around and goes, this has been negative, positive, indifferent, whatever. But the enjoyment of seeing teams like Morocco get semi-finals, Germany getting beat, it delivered on that level.
Yeah, I mean, it still has its own entertainment value as well, right, Ross?
Yeah.
It can't always be predictable. To end it off, I always end with one question, because I do get professionals on this podcast. What would be your advice for, like, budding football stars, or even budding football pundits, I guess?
I think to get into football, we're here in Malaysia, so your football opportunities and experiences will be very, very different to mine back in England. For example, or a kid growing up, or a player back in England. Age shouldn't be a factor. But you got to love it, thoroughly enjoy it, or if you're obsessive, then work out what the pathway is for you to do it. And I have got no problem with an 11 or 12-year-old going, do you know what, I want to earn X amount of money, and my best route of doing it is by becoming a professional footballer. Well, make sure you know what the strategy is and go through it. Dedication, obviously.
It's a lot of hard work.
Mass mental, mental, physical, a lot of sacrifice, because there will be moments where you are put in a position where it's like, do I do the footballing thing, which I'm not particularly enjoying because it's not always enjoyable, or do I do the other thing? That could literally be the fork in the road which defines whether you become a professional or not. And just enjoyment with a bit of sadness, and try and be realistic. If you're not good enough, no, you're not good enough. And then just become enjoyment and get another career. But yeah, I mean, I loved it. I'm obsessive. I didn't even know I was doing half of it at the time, in the sense that it wasn't a career path. It was just, I was there in the moment, thoroughly enjoyed it. And I often say this to people, but the fact that I'm sat here having this conversation with you is virtue of the fact that I had the career that I had. So something was right to be able to be given these opportunities. So yeah, if anyone wants to go down that path, then good luck to them. You need a bit of luck.
Think you need a bit of luck in everything, yeah.
Just a little bit of luck, yeah. And always listen to the right music.
Very good advice.
Yeah.
Well, there's one thing I want to say before we end the podcast is, like, David James is such a nice person, because we did meet by me asking him a very stupid question. He never made me feel bad about it. he was patient enough to give me something, some information that was probably so basic. He's probably never had to explain it before. But when he talked to me about my show and I told him they would never choose me to be the one to interview him, he was like, well, you don't need to know that much about football to do the interview. Do you have time? Let's do it. So I think being a good person and being a likable person and being approachable is also something that is very important if you want to not just have a good career, just have a good life in general, you know, like being humble enough, even though like you're a football star, just come down to this level and see this like girl that's like half your size and be like, yeah, we can have this conversation.
Literally, yeah. I think this is a really good point you made there, because I had a long career and at times I wasn't particularly nice, and that wasn't that I was a bad person. I was just so focused on being this perfect player that, and I talk about sacrifices, relationships are one of them in so many different contexts. And someone told me one day, said, life's a lot easier, a lot better if you're more caring towards other people. I've always given, but there's ways of giving. You know, financially, you go, yeah, off. That'll help you. And then you leave it. There's no actual emotional connection to it. This isn't about money. This is about your time, your emotion, whatever. Life becomes a lot better.
Yeah,
absolutely. So what you're saying is true. You can be dedicated, but you can also be a nice person with it. And thank you very much for having me on the show.
Welcome to the C Word with Calista, where curiosity meets creativity, and we discuss the king of C's, content.